First off, Putz and Players Chassani would like to thank Solomon and Debbie Marciano. First off, for actually moving to this neighborhood. Until a few months ago, you know, we just thought Venezuela and Brazil were, you know, some exotic places, you know, to go on vacation. But actually, they have some pretty good exports as well. They came to the community here, and they really took the place by storm, whether it's at a tzedakah function in the morning, whether it's Yeshiva Shar Yosha. Wherever I go lately, I'm bumping into Solomon and his wife doing beautiful things at you know, parlor meetings all over the place. So we'd like to thank them, first of all, for that. Second of all, on a personal note, I would like to thank them for being personally responsible for my own reunion with tonight's guest speaker, Rabbi Mansour. For many of you that don't know it, I actually sometimes act as a double for him, you know, if you see the similarity. But truth be told, Rabbi Mansour and I were chavrusas 20 years ago in Yeshiva Merkaz HaTorah in Israel. And it was an Ashkenaz yeshiva. And there were about four Syrian fellows that showed up, and suffice it to say, I became part of them. And, you know, we would go out in the beginning of the Zman, but before I knew it, not only was I chavrusas with Rabbi Mansour, but he was taking me on Thursday nights to learn in Meir Sharim by a tzaddik, Reb Chaim Brim. And from there, we really developed a very close relationship, which, unfortunately, after coming back to America, we lost touch. Sure enough, about 2 years ago, I was in California for, you know, a two-day, very intense business conference, and at the Four Seasons, I think. And I ended up in Prime Grill. I walk in, and who's there? Rabbi Mansour. I go, Rabbi, you know, what are you doing here? He says, I'm here on business as well. And we struck up a conversation. A few months later, I'm in Philadelphia for something. I bump into him again. A few months later, I was in Israel. I bump into him again. I said, somebody is trying to send us a signal that we're supposed to get back together. So here we are. It's now Elul. And, you know, we know that we're coming up to the Yom Nerayim. And the famous question is that everybody knows that on Rosh Hashanah, the tzaddikim, the real tzaddikim and the real Rishon are both signed in, you know, the book for whatever they're going to get. The problem is the Beinonim, which is, you know, most of us. And the question is, so if you're a Beinoni on Rosh Hashanah, then why, during the Aseret Yemei Teshuva, don't you just have to do one mitzvah, tip the scale, and now you're an automatic instant tzaddik. And there, you know, you get signed into the book. Unfortunately, for us, especially me, it doesn't work that way. And for you know, it's much cheaper, but Chazal say that for every minute that you're not doing tshuva during Aseret Yemei Teshuva, it's actually an avera. So if you're not doing tshuva, that God gave you that act, in order to repent, you are you're going actually the opposite way. So it's our zchus to have with us tonight somebody who's actually a walking Kiddush Hashem and who goes to communities all over the world and brings people back and closer to Yiddishkeit, which is actually how I believe Solomon and Debbie met the rabbi. So it's our privilege to listen to some Divrei Chizuk from Rabbi Mansour and hopefully help us as we get closer to the Yom Nerayim.
Bershut Rabbanim Hashuvim, and of course our Achsanya of Torah, Solomon and his dear wife, for opening up their home. I would say that I feel at home, and I'm not saying that by coincidence. In the summers, we go to Deal, New Jersey, and I happen to live on Lawrence Avenue in Deal. My address is 17 Lawrence Avenue, so we're connected even by location. It's a big zichut also to see a lot of new friends and a lot of old friends. As Yehuda mentioned, it is confirmed I was his chavrita. And I just ask you tonight to bear with my Sephardic accent. It's hard for me to change. And then I become too conscientious of trying to be an Ashkenazi, and then it doesn't come out right. I was on a cruise last year in Alaska, which is another story in itself. So one of the obligations on the cruise, besides ice fishing and all the other fun stuff we did, was to give the Daf Yomi. Happened to be, it always works out that way, whenever I travel, it's the hardest Dafim those weeks. And we were doing Masechet Yebamot, the most complicated cases, you know, with the charts and everything. And there were some old-timers, Ashkenazi, these guys that went through Shas, you know, through the Daf, third time, fourth time already, you know, real seasoned learners. So the first time I went in with them, and I see these guys, they're ready, lines, they're ready to, you know, to come at me. So I gave them the shiur, and they were satisfied. Okay, they respected, they enjoyed. And we went for a week. Every single day we didn't miss, for Shabbat stuff, everything was unbelievable. It was a big kiddush Hashem. In the middle of Ketchikan, Alaska, you had 25 guys on a boat in a conference room learning the daf. It was a tremendous kiddush Hashem. So at the end of the, and I told them, I can't change my habara. I speak the way I speak, don't worry about it, Rabbi, don't worry about it, we understand, no, it's not a problem. So at the end of the week, one of the old times, I forgot his name, he was a chashuv man. He came to me and said everything was great, everything was phenomenal, we loved the shiurim, it was clear, it was lucid, it was enjoyable. But one question, I'm asking for the hevra here, it seems the whole hevra has this question, but they're embarrassed. No, what's the problem? Who is she? Who is she? What is this, Abner Costello? What do you mean, who is she? I don't know what you're talking about. Who is she? I don't know who is she. No, you keep on saying in the shi'ud, every like other word. She says, she says, she says. I don't know what you're talking about. He said, think. I'm thinking to myself. So I said, oh, I got it. We call Rashi. You call it Rashi. So it seems in the shi'ud, I was saying, so look at the Rashi. He didn't hear the Resh, so they keep... And I said, you went a week? He didn't ask. I must have said it 4,000 times. She. What's the guy crazy? Who's he quoting? Was it some reform guy quoting some lady? She says, who's she? What is the guy? The guy flipped out. He went on a cruise for 1 week already. The guy's quoting Lady Talmudis. I said, no, Rashi. So, okay, fine. So I walked away. He goes back here. Oh, all of them. Oh, that's what he meant. As was mentioned, of course, we're a few weeks away from Yemei HaDin. I'm going to tell you a thought tonight. I never said this thought over yet. It's not a shelf speech that I'm going to give you tonight. It's really a new idea that I saw brought down in Sefarim HaKedoshim. It's a novel idea. There's no question about it. It's a new way of looking at it, and it's a chidush, Zichut of Solomon, we'll say a new idea tonight. And now Perasha, we read about the Ben Sorer Umore, about the wayward child. The Torah tells us, they have a boy, he's before his bar mitzvah, and he's a little mischievous, he's a little delinquent, he likes to drink wine, he likes to eat good meat. He ran out of money. He stole some money from his mother's pocketbook to continue his addiction. And he receives no rebuke. Whatever the parents tell him, he doesn't listen. And finally, the parents, at their wits' end, take him to the Beit Din. We don't know what to do. And then, Ushomeya Bekolenu, he doesn't listen. And at the end of the day, the Beit Din says, well, we're going to kill him. And not only are we going to kill him, we're going to give him the worst of the punishments, Sekila. And the Gemara says, Mutav, Shiyamut, Zakai, Val Yamut Hayav. Better he should die now when he's still relatively innocent when it's still just a misdemeanor crime, instead of him dying as a hardened criminal, because the Torah projects that if this boy remains in his derech, in his way, eventually it's not going to be just stealing, it's going to lead to murder, it's going to lead to manslaughter, it's going to lead to the worst crimes, and we don't want it to get to that. So we'd rather, you know, lynch him now, when he's still relatively innocent, zakai ve'al yamut hayav. Good, that's the Gemara. To show you what a law this is, the Gemara Sanhedrin dedicates an entire perek to discuss this wayward child. Today we would call him a child at risk. Today we have a whole community of these unfortunate b'nei sorer u'morer. So the Gemara says, a very bold statement, Tanakama, ben sorer u'morer lo haya ve'lo nivra. It never happened. The case is a hypothetical. So what does the Torah have to tell us? A case that never happened. There was never a child that did this. They never stoned them. It's all in theory. So the Gemara says, well, so what do you need it for then? Drosh mekabel sachar. No, you could learn it and you'll get reward for learning it. But it's one of those things that it never manifested. It never came to fruition, but the drosh mekabel sachar. And this Gemara always perplexed me because what? There's not enough Torah to learn? As if we're searching for more stuff. What? Shas is not enough? The Hamisha Amshe Torah, all the Midrashim. So if you're bored, then you need something else to learn. So it never happens, never going to happen. But you get credit. There's enough Torah in the realm of reality that we didn't need this extra piece. That's just lo haya ve'lo nivra. But then the Gemara gets more dramatic. Amar Rabbi Yonatan. Rabbi Yonatan comes along and says, you said lo haya ve'lo nivra. He says, I saw a ben sorer u'moreh, and I sat on his grave. V'yashavti al kivro. Oh. Now this is also a little perplexing because usually when we study the Talmud, we don't like to make an argument in the Mitziut. One rabbi is telling you, it never happened. Another rabbi comes up, never happened, I sat on his grave. What are you telling me, never happened? So what, they're arguing on such a, he's saying black, he's saying white. It's an argument to the extremes. We can never accept an argument like that. You cannot argue on Mitziut, you cannot argue on the reality. So I saw in Sefarim Kedoshim, and again, this is a tremendous chiddush. Why are they killing this Ben Sorer u'Morer? Not for what he's doing now, necessarily. It's on the projection. It's on, we see he's on a path. If this is left unchecked, according to the way we're analyzing, which means if you took this kid to a psychologist or a therapist on Park Avenue, they'd assess the child, they'll give him a battery of tests and all that, they'd conclude, after $500 an hour, whatever they charge, they'd conclude with a whole bunch of fancy words, that this child over here, textbook, statistic, we're telling you this kid over here is going to be the next Charles Manson. He's going to be the next son of Sam. The kid's going to murder. We know. Hey, look, here's another. This kid. You see this kid? He's like him. You see this kid over here? The same thing. So already they're telling him Bili Sefik, without a shadow of a doubt, this is what's going to be with this kid. He's got all the symptoms. He's addicted to the wine, he likes the meat, he steals money, he's brazen, he's gutsy, and he's only 12 years old. The kid's a murderer. We're telling you right now, we'll bet money. The Torah comes along and says, you know why lo haya ve'lo nivra? You know why the case will never happen? Because that projection is not correct. We don't believe in that statistic. We don't believe in that theory. We don't believe that you could tell a child who's a little off the derech, a child that's a little mischievous in school, we do not believe that you can come and say, this kid already is predetermined to become a bum. That this kid over here is going to become a misfit. That this kid over here is going to become a troublemaker. That sevara, that logic is not Torah. We never look at a child, no matter what he's doing, and come along and say, he's finished. This sevara that says, mutav shiyamut zakai ba'al yamut hayab, that's assuming that what? This kid's going to be a murderer. No, that's by maybe goyim we say that. But by a Jew, we never write anybody off. We never say, him? Forget it, but I have statistics. We're talking Jews now, we're not talking about statistics in books. A Yehudi, no matter how estranged he is, and no matter how wild he might be, and no matter how involved he might be, there's always a chance that he's going to come back, and there's always a hope, and therefore to come along and say, this is going to happen. Lo haya ve lo nivra. Doesn't exist such a thing. I'm going to explain it to you a little deeper now, with your permission. I hope I can be clear what I'm going to tell you now. There's a Sefer HaKuzari. The Sefer HaKuzari gives to us what he refers to as Datz Ham. What is Datz Ham? Datz Ham is the order of the creation. He says the order of the creation is four levels. Domem, which is the inanimate. The Shtender is a domem. It's a rock. It's a piece of wood. That's the most basic form of creation. Then you have Tzomeyach. Tzomeyach is like the plants, the flowers. Then you have Hay, that's the animals. It's a little higher. And then you have Medaber. Medaber is the human. Medaber, the one that communicates through speech. Domem, Tzomeyach, Chayim Medaber. Este Kuzari, really there's a fifth level. The fifth level is called Yehudi. Interesting. So really it's Datz Ham E. Domem, Tzomeyach, Chayim Medaber, Yehudi. Meaning, what is he saying? That it seems the Yehudi is in a different class, which means there's four classes, and then the Jew is in a separate entity, a separate league. It's not that there's five levels, there's four levels. And then there's another level called the Yehudi. He didn't even classify it together. The Domem Somei Chayim Medaber, and I'm going to explain to you why he didn't classify it together. How many degrees from the lowest level, which is the Shtender, which is the Domem, to the Medaber, which we're explaining as a Goy. How many degrees? It's three levels apart. That means take the most sophisticated Medaber, the professor in Harvard. He has Rashi Tevot before his name, Rashi Tevot after his name, Ashuv, whatever he is. Professor, he has a chair in the university. He's Medaber. Oh, he's the ultimate Medaber. Take the most base rock. The rock that has no value. The most pale, the most coarse. Take the ultimate Domem. The Harvard professor to the Domem, it's only three grades down. Domem, Tzomeyach, Chay Medaber. Which is his third cousin. That's how close they are. It's just a sort of the Medaber. He's a sophisticated rock. He's one degree away from the high, from the animal. I hate to talk like this. We're all Jews. But that's what the Kuzari is saying. We saw this in Nazi Germany. If anybody doubts that this the Medaber is related to the high, that there's an affiliation. Just go read some of the stories what the Nazis, Yimach Shemam, did in Germany, and you'll see exactly what does it mean, why he put them right next to each other. History has proven already this truth of the relation between the Medaber and the Hay. a Jew? It's not the pshat with the fifth level. It's not the pshat with two levels away from an orangutan or a zebra. No, the Yehudi, a different stratosphere, a different madriga, a different level. What's the mechanics? Without getting confusing. There's olamot, there's worlds. There's four worlds. There's really five worlds, but tonight we'll talk about four worlds. Without confusing each other. The highest world is called Olam HaAtzilut. That's the world of Borei Olam. That's God's world. That's the highest Madriga. That's where the Kisei HaKavod is. That's where the Shekhinah is. Under that, you have what's called the Olam HaBriyah. That's the world where the angels are. Malachim are in that world. After that, you have Olam HaYetzirah. There's also angels in that world. These are millions of light years away. And then you have the world that we're in now is called Olam HaAsiyah. You could remember it. You remember the way you remember the Olamot is Rashi Tevot Abiyah. Asilut, Biriyah, Yetzirah, Asiyah. As a matter of fact, the holy books say God's name is Yudke Vavke. Each one of the names of a Kadosh Baruch Hu represents another world. The Yud is Olam HaAtzilut. The He, Biriyah. The Vav, Yetzirah. And this world that we're in, that's the last He of a Kadosh Baruch Hu's name. Whatever that means. I'm just giving you concepts, just to dabble a little in these inyanim, so we can elevate ourselves. Where does the Jewish Neshama come from? Which one of these worlds? The Jewish Neshama comes from the Atzilut. It comes from the Yud. It's the highest Madriga. Our Neshama emanates from a place where even the angels cannot go. The angels are not allowed in the Atzilut. They start in the lower world. In the morning, we have a custom, you probably have the same Beracha. Right after Yishtabach, we say, Yotzer Or Ubore Hoshech. And what does that blessing talk about? The angels. The Ofanim, the Hayot HaKodesh, Mekabelim Reshut Zelazev, Venotim, Yotzer Or Ubore, Yetzirah Beriyah, that's the angels. But an angel cannot go to the highest level, which means the lowest Jew has him in a neshama that connects him to the upper world that is banned even from the Malachim. That's the power and the greatness of a Jew. So you can't classify a Jew as the fifth species. Not the fifth species. It's a different makeup. It's a different biology. It's a different chemistry. That's why, incidentally, the Ashkenazim, if I'm not mistaken, the way you refer to Jews, you call them Yidden. Am I correct? If I may offer an explanation why you chose that terminology. Yidden is really a Yud. Because the neshama of every Jew comes from the Olam HaAtzilut, which is connected the Yud of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name. Therefore they refer to Yidden. And this is talking about the worst Jew, the derelict. This is talking about the lowest Jew, but his neshama, that means when a Jew does something in this world, his effect is on the highest olamot. When you hear this concept now, you have such a respect for what does it mean, Jews. When I hear this concept over here, the value of what a Yehudi is. That means every Jew has such a potential where he can even elevate himself higher than the level of the Malachim. Where the Malachim cannot trespass, a Yehudi is able to be there. And therefore, yes, maybe by the other nations of the world we have a statistic. This child, yeah, we can predict he's going to be a murderer. Oh, based on what this kid's doing at 12 years old, he's going to be the worst criminal. Yeah, you can predict it. But by a Jew, we have a neshama that comes from Tahat Kisei HaKavod. We're not made up from the same chromosome and the same genome. It's a different species. It's the fifth, it's not the fifth species. It's four and then there's Yehudi. That's the Yidden. That's from the Olam HaAtzilut. And therefore the Gemara says, Lo Hayah Velo Nivra. Such a thing can never happen. You can never kill a Jew and say, we're writing him off. Nothing's going to come out of him. He's going to become a bum. Lo haya, we don't believe in such a concept. There's no such thing. If we would only understand what we're saying over here. And trust me, I've seen it so many times. Jews where you would think, it's over. There was recently a Jew in London. A friend of mine had met him, he invited him to come for Shabbat. He came to Shabbat. So, it wasn't religious. He's a non-affiliated, doesn't even put on tefillin. Zero. So that was Sunday morning, the man, the Baal HaBayit, had to go to synagogue, and he can't leave the kid in the house with his wife, you have Yehud. So he says, all right, listen, I have to go pray. I'll drop you off to the cafe, you'll have breakfast. He didn't even attempt to tell him to come to the shul. He knows the guy, he doesn't have tefillin. So he says, well, where are you going? He says, I'm going to synagogue. I'll go with you. Okay, I don't want to push. You want to go? Fine. Do you put on tefillin? No, I haven't put on tefillin for my bar mitzvah. Says, okay, we have a pair of tefillin for you. You remember how to put it on? I can figure it out. He goes to the synagogue. He says, is there a separate room where I can put on the tefillin? No, we're not like that. All Jews, we love all Jews. Thank you. Take it back? Okay. Indian giver. So he said, you don't have to go into another room. You could pray with us. No, I'd rather go in another room. It's okay. Because of your jeans, because of your t-shirt? It's okay. We've seen Jews like this. You can pray with us. I'd rather go in the other room alone. So he asks him, why? What's the matter? He lifts up his sleeve, where he's supposed to put the tefillin. He has a tattoo on his arm. A giant tattoo. But that's not the chiddush. The tattoo is of his girlfriend. I guess it's his former girlfriend. And out of kavod to the sibur, let's say that she wasn't dressed like a lady from Bnei Berak. Let's put it in a nice way. V'amivin yavin. So the guy said, I'm going to go in the synagogue, I'm going to put my arm up over there. This is gilui arayot, shfichut damim, avodah zarah in one move, one position. So they had to call up Gedolei Yisrael. Is he allowed to put the tefillin on the other arm? Lefty, righty, Gedolei Yisrael said, no, we'll figure out a way to take off, to remove the tattoo. However it was, today, this fellow over here, religious Jew, we call him a Ben Torah with a not nice tattoo on his arm. Now, if you didn't know this class that I'm telling, you'd look at the guy, he'd show that tattoo, no hope for him, you know what, the rabbis were wrong, Ben Torah, it happened, this is the guy. But the explanation is, his neshama also comes from the Olam Hayud, it also comes from Atzilut, and there's no such thing, and no matter what the Jew does, afal pi shehata Yisraelu. And you could never desecrate the neshama. The neshama could never be extinguished. The neshama can never be violated. It can never be vandalized. Afal pi shehata Yisrael. So the Gemara is saying, lo haya velo nivra. To write off a Jew at 12 years old and say, nothing's going to be with him. No, we don't believe in that. That's Simara, not Torah. Oh. So what does it mean, Drosh v'kabel sachar? All of you always hear the pesukim that are quoted by the high holiday season. Dirshu Hashem b'matzeo. Search out God when He's available. Kira'ubi yoto karov. The Torah is saying, you know what, when a regular Jew like us, we're going to read this parasha and we see lo haya velo nivra, every Jew, there's hope. Everybody has a history. Everybody made sins, some recurring sins, chronic sins, and over, and sometimes we get depressed and we get down on ourselves. What's going to be? God's going to accept my teshuvah. Look at all the averot I did already. There's no hope for me. I was pogem my neshama. And then you read the story of the Ben Sorer Morer, and you read the Gemara's explanation. Lo ayav lo nevra. We don't believe it. No matter what he did, you can always come back. There's always hope. Oh, drosh. Meaning, melashon dirshu Hashem b'matzeo. This inspires us to come closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Drosh. Go seek out God. You read this parashat, it's inspiring. Instead of giving up hope, instead of saying it's hopeless, it's finished, it's over, there's no chart, you read the parashat, it's invigorating. So, tishu, we kabel sachar, the sachar that you make teshuvah. Also, what did Rav Yonatan say? Rav Yonatan says, what are you talking? I was at his grave. You're telling me, lo ayav, I sat on his grave. So listen to the explanation that I saw. The Arizal had a Talmid of Chaim Vital, as we know. It's interesting. Rav Chaim Vital studied with the Ari only for 2 years. He was 28 years old when he studied with the Arizal. The Arizal only lived till 40, or actually to 38. So how could it be? For 2 years he got all the Kabbalah of the Arizal. So the holy books bring down that, and I told this to the students in the En Yaakov class one night, I said, the books bring down that for the next 60 years, the Arizal came to Rav Chaim in his dream and taught him Torah in his dreams. So I said, when I read that story, it's very comforting, because now me and the Arizal have something in common. So he said to us, we both teach our students when they're sleeping. I felt that, at least I'm not the first one. So what happened? One time the Rav Chaim came in to learn with his master, and the Arizal stood up. So Rav Chaim said, you're standing up for me. He says, I don't know. You did something today or yesterday. Tell me what you did. You're a different person. He says, actually, I was studying Torah by the grave of Benayahu ben Yehoyada. Tomorrow's daf, you'll read about Benayahu. Benayahu was the general of Shlomo HaMelech, Arav HaShalom, and he was Gadol Ador, he was the head of the Sanhedrin. He's buried in Eretz Yisrael. So he said, Rav Chaim said, I went to the grave of Benayahu. So the Arizal says, it seems that you're praying by the kever, the neshama of Benayahu went in you. And therefore you've upgraded, you're on a higher madriga. As a matter of fact, this is not an uncommon chidush. The Ben Ish Chai, the Ben Yosef Chaim, whose yotzeit was on Friday, he was the Gaon from Baghdad. How did he become the Ben Ish Chai? He says when he was young, he went to the grave of Benayahu, and he was mishtateyach on the grave for 3 days. And all of a sudden, when he left the kevin, he got a certain he'ara. That's why the Ben Ish Chai's book on Shas is called Benayahu Ben Yehoyada. He named the sefer after Benayahu because that's where he got his inspiration. So it seems that when you go to the kevin of a tzaddik, it's possible that the tzaddik, he gives some of the kiddushah to the person. So you know what Rav Yonatan was saying? He says, you're right. Lo haya velo nivra. We don't believe in that. We don't believe that you write off a child when he's 12 years old and say there's nothing going to come from this kid. And I'll prove it to you. Ani hayiti yoshev etzel kivro. I remember there was a 12-year-old kid in the community, and he was a bum, and he was a delinquent, and he was a derelict. And at the end of his life, he became gadol ador. So much so, I went to his kever. I went to his kevin in order to receive a he'ara, like Rav Chaim Vital went to Benayahu, and the Ben Ish Chai went to, Ani hayiti bekevro. He was a bum at 12 years old, and he became gadol ador. He wasn't coming to argue on Tana Kama of Yonatan. He's coming to confirm, you're right, I'll tell you, it never happened. We don't believe that you give up on Jews. We don't believe you write a guy off because he looks a little funny, because he has a little different tie, a little colored shirt, a little funny pair of shoes. Ah, this guy, what is he? Nothing. He comes from the Ulama Yudin. Ulama Yudin is nothing, He's higher than a malach. He has a couple of ashes on his nesh. You gotta wash him off a little. You gotta polish him like a diamond in the rough. Oh, if this is true, what I'm telling you now, it's a novel explanation. It's a novel. It's worth it just to come to say it over here tonight. Oh, Now I'm going to tell you another chiddush. The Gemara says in Sanhedrin, in this chapter, Ben Sorer Mure, that if the mother forgives the Ben Sorer Mure, she says, I forgive you. Gemara says, Mahul, and they don't continue the process. What's the case? The kid's eating meat, the kid's drinking wine, he's going crazy. He's stealing money. So the mother comes to the kid and says, please, honey, stop. You're on the wrong path. He don't listen to his mother. He laughs at his mother. But if the mother still says, honey, I forgive you, the Gemara says, he's forgiven. No case. Now, I want to understand this. What does it mean the mother forgive? How could you forgive the kid? The kid is disobedient. He's fresh. He's arrogant. He doesn't listen to any instructions. And what is the mother saying? I forgive you. You know what the explanation is? Listen to a beautiful explanation. God put in every parent an uncanny ability that no matter what their children do, and no matter how crazy they are, no matter how wild they are, ask the mother, what's the mother going to say? He's a good boy. What others cannot see, parents can always see. In our eyes, our children, we're able to see that yud. We're able to see that goodness. God gave parents the ability, no matter what the child does, they always say, yeah, but he's special, but he's so good, he is. And that's a beracha, because if we didn't have parents that would see the good in us, then every child would be a wayward kid. And every child would be. The only ones that really trust in us and believe in us is the parents. They have that x-ray vision that they can see the spark under all the soot and all the dirt. They can zone in on that spark. Therefore the mother says, hey, he's a good boy, I could forgive him. The Gemara says, and I know tonight's PTA, I'm going to tell you a chiddush on the PTA now. The Gemara says, "Kol ha-melamed et ben havero Torah ki'ilu yelado." Anybody that teaches his friend's son Torah or daughter Torah, it's like he bore him. Which means the Gemara is really saying that what the teachers of our children are like the parents to a certain degree. Now I always read this Gemara as the Gemara is giving chizuk to the teachers. You should know, it's not stam when you teach a Jewish child. It's like you're the father. Ki'ilu yilado. There's an interesting shoot Maharshal. The Maharshal has a hakira. Does a rabbi in the yeshiva mekayem piriyah v'riviyah? Because the Gemara says ki'ilu yilado. So he teaches a boy, he teaches a girl, according to Bet Hillel, boy and a girl, he has a sheila. He comes out, you don't fulfill piriyah v'riviyah like that. But ad kedei kach, the teacher is like the parent. So I always thought it's to give the teacher a chizuk. He's not getting paid enough, the teacher, as we know. So the rabbi said, yeah, don't worry. Yeah, you have a lot of reward. We're going to ki'ilu you. You're in the ki'ilu family now. Ki'ilu yelado. Yeah, it's like you're boring. You get some sort of extra credit. You won't get the credit. That's where you get in the next world. There was one time a teacher in the school, the yeshiva. So the principal walked in and the kids were going crazy. They were jumping on the desks and they were. So the principal said, my dear teacher, these children are like monkeys. So the teacher said, you pay us peanuts, you get monkeys. In any event, maybe this Gemara is saying something deeper. It's not coming to pat the shoulder of the teacher. Oh, kilu yilado, what is zechut? You know what it's telling our teachers? You have to be like the parent. Just like the parent always sees the good in the child, you're going to take a job as a teacher, as a rebbe, as a mechanech. You have to know ki ilu yilado. You have to be able to see the good. And if you can't see the good in the kids, you have no right being a teacher. You have no right standing in front of the classroom. It's coming to obligate the teachers. And I'm sorry to tell you, maybe in the olden days there was teachers that had more patience, had more love, had more hope, had more faith in the student. Today, how common is a child acts out one way, already he's in the principal's office, before you know it, he's thrown out. Where's the ability to see the good? Where's the ability to work with the child? Where's the ability to tap into the spark, to the yud? What happened to the kilu yelado? You're a father of the child. You only see bad because he did a little trick, a little mischievous. Hazon Ish said, a child gets thrown out of yeshiva. Before you throw a child out of yeshiva, you need to have bet din of 23. He says, din enefashot. Din enefashot, you need 23 judges. Spikuach nefesh. What, to make such a decision over a cup of coffee and throw him out? Just throw him out. What happened to the kilu yelado? So parents, I'm going to give you now a secret. Take it from a teacher now. I'm talking now from the other side now. Our children have only one advocate in their life, and that's the parents. Be careful what you tell your children's teachers about your children. Because they will hold it against you. Trust me, I'm a teacher. We're human beings as well. You think we know every single child in the classroom? There's 27 kids. We know everybody. You know them. Now a parent will call me up. Hi, Rabbi. I'm so-and-so's mother. Oh, hi, Mr. So-and-so. Your child is special, precious, of course, beautiful. Yeah, but you know, Rabbi, he's very lazy. He comes home and, you know, he doesn't do his homework and we don't know what to do and, you know, he's mischievous and I don't know who this child really is. Now she's putting an image in my brain. Instead of being the advocate for the child, she spoiled me now. Now the child walks in the next day, I look at him with such a dirty look, you ain't good for nothing. You lazy boy. What did the parent do now? The parent already put the child at a disadvantage. Ma, why is the teacher looking at me cross-eyed? Because already you're programmed in his brain. Therefore, I'm not saying you shouldn't rebuke your children. But when it comes to their teachers, let me tell you what I do with PTA. When I go as a parent for my children. First of all, I don't believe that an 18-year-old girl that just graduated from the seminary is going to tell me anything about my son or daughter that I don't know already. So that's the first thing. But, of course, we have respect. Rabbi Mansour, your son, the T's, he doesn't cross it like this, and the W's, he makes it with a little arc, 97 degrees, it should be. She's holding it as very serious issues. And of course, it's terrible. Okay, we've got to work on it. Okay, with the shame. Okay, if they're respectful, you know, of course, the Rechere is Kadma, the Torah, we're not going to... And also, in the grammar, okay, Diktuke Echa, okay, all the different things. And I receive it. And then I have a minhag. And I do it very casually. Oh, Mrs. So-and-so, by the way, I just want to tell you a story that happened with my son, Yosef, the other day. We were in the park, and they were playing ball with the children. And it's a true story, and one of the children weren't chosen into the game. And my son said, if he doesn't get chosen in, it's not fair for him to sit alone. So he sat out also, and he sat on the sidelines with that boy. I don't know why I'm telling you this story. It just came to my mind. What am I doing? I'm not telling her. I'm telling true stories about my truth, but I want to teach her. I'm programming her. I want this to be like your son. I want you to see the good in this child now. So I always make sure to tell a story to every teacher about something good about my children. Oh, my daughter Rachel, she's so organized. When we need something to be done, my wife says, Rachel, go set up the room, set up the Shabbat table. She knows where everything is. She's meticulous. She's so neat. She's so special. teacher, really? We didn't know that? We didn't? Yeah, oh, absolutely. And then I'd make a, I don't even know why I'm telling you this. I'm sorry. Tell me about the T's again. Tell me about the W's. What were you saying again? I want to make sure so I don't forget to rebuke her when I get home and all that. But meanwhile, you're planting seeds in the teacher's brain that your children are good. And I've seen other parents, they can't wait to indict their children in front of the teachers. You're right. It's much worse than that. You don't know the half of it. Our poor children are innocent victims. Who's going to defend them? If you're not going to defend your children, and I'm not saying to be blind parents, God forbid, let them go crazy without rebuke. Rebuke is done privately. But to the teachers, you want to position your children in the best way possible. We cannot ensure success for our children. We can only position them. They have to succeed on their own, but we have to position them in the best way possible where they can succeed. And that's how to foster a bond between the parent or the teacher and the student. But if already we break it, there's 18 kids in the class, we don't want the teacher to say, write your kid off, because he heard Lashon Hara from the parent about the kid. So the kid, right away, he's out. I don't have time for this kid. Even the parent says he's lazy, and they'll hold it against you. Oh, Mrs. Sosa, even you said, I remember you said they're lazy. Yeah, you were right. Yeah, he's lazy. Now it comes back to bite you. That's why God gave children parents, so we can defend them. But that's the pshat ki'ilu yilado. Rabotai. We make so many viduim when it comes to this month now. So many things we're confessing. One thing that I think might slip, go under the radar. We might not make the proper confession on our delinquency as parents. The Gemara says there was a great Jew. You might not have heard of him, but the Gemara gives him so much credit. They said if it wasn't for this Jew, it's Gemara Baba Batra, Daf Chaf Aleph. If it wasn't for this Jew, the Torah would have been forgotten in Israel. Well, who's this Jew? Rabbi Akiva? No. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai? No. Then who's the man that's responsible for Torah and Klal Yisrael? V'Yehoshua ben Gamla Shemo. His name is Yehoshua ben Gamla. Yehoshua ben Gamla? I never heard of him. He had an invention. What did he invent? He invented the yeshiva. The day school, the elementary school. What happened? Before Yehoshua ben Gamla, a father would teach his son, that's the way, homeschooling. Everybody was homeschooled. But Gemara says he saw that, wow, that was good for the children that had parents. But what about the yetomim? What about the orphaned child, God forbid? He doesn't have a parent to study Torah with them. So he opened up yeshivas. They started with one yeshiva in Jerusalem. And from there it franchised out. And today, if we have a yeshiva system where children are able to go study Torah, it's because of this man, Yehoshua ben Gamla. The Gemara says, Beram zachur latov ha'ish ahu v'Yehoshua ben Gamla shemo she'ilmaleh hu nishtakha Torah mi'Yisrael. My question on that Gemara was, Yehoshua ben Gamla's great invention. The kids might not so be happy with the invention, but it's a great invention. Your yeshiva system, kids can go to school, but you did it for the yetomim. You did it for the orphans primarily. So it was really schooling for the orphans. How many orphans were in Klal Yisrael? But the idea that orphans are a rarity. It's not the mass of the population. So what do you mean? If it wasn't for him, Torah would have been forgotten? What, everybody's an orphan, God forbid? No, most of the children had parents, they could study with their fathers. So the few kids that, Hasba Shalom, they were orphaned, so he had to open up a system. What are you giving him so much credit? Ilmaleu nishtakha Torah miYisrael? What, the Torah only comes from these few orphaned children? You did a good thing, you opened up an orphanage, very nice. But nishtakha Torah miYisrael from the minority population? You know what the explanation is? I'm talking now as parents, and I'm talking to myself as well. And if I'm talking about it, that means it's on my mind, which means I'm just as guilty as the next guy. I'm not pontificating here tonight or giving you a sermon or talking above you. I'm talking on this subject together. Our main role as parents is to be role models for our children. is to model proper behavior, that they should see a living role model alive in front of them. So they have a dugma, they have a sample, they have a model in front of them. More than the speeches that you're going to give your children, and more than the dirush, and more than the musar, and all the verbal actions speak louder than words. And our children are like spies. They're like the KGB, they're watching, they monitor everything. Even when you don't think they're watching, they're watching. They know everything, they know everything. Listen to what I'm going to tell you now. The modeling of good behavior, the role modeling, the Torah says God loved Avraham. Avraham was dear to God. Why? The Pasuk says, because I know you, Avraham, Lema'an asher yitzaveh et banav et b'nei beto aharav. Because I know, Avraham, you're the master mechanech. You have given your children a great chinuch, and God says, you're the unbelievable father, and therefore I love you. And therefore I sign a covenant, because you're mitzaveh your children. I'm going to give you a statistic now. You can double check and see if I'm right. So Avraham is the paradigm father. He's the master mechanech. Look in the whole Torah. How many conversations do you see Avraham have with Yitzhak? The master mechanech. God says, I'm giving you everything because you're the mechanech. Lema'al asher yitzaveh. Okay, trivia. Give me one statement that Avraham is talking to Yitzhak. Oh, very good. Very good. You hit it. The Torah says, the first conversation that's recorded, he's 37 years old, Yitzhak. It's 37. They're on the way to Akedah. So Yitzhak says, Dad, I see the logs, I see the hatchet, I see all the equipment. Mechila, Dad, ayyeh, where's the animal? Vayomer Avraham el Yitzhak. Elohim yireh lo aseh le'ola beni. My son, that's God will show us where this shit is. End of conversation. That's the chinuch he gave him. That's the only conversation recorded in the whole Torah that Avraham talks to Yitzhak. Where's the chinuch? Where's the leman asher yitzaveh? And you know what the explanation is? Because if you're living in the arba amot of Avraham Avinu, and you're in the presence of such a great personality, he doesn't have to open his mouth. The role model is so strong. The living Avraham is so powerful and so intense. That's the chinuch. Avraham, you were a master because you mastered yourself and your child saw it. Yitzhak was brought up in the Beit Midrash of Avraham Avinu. When you're living with such a great personality in front of you, you don't have to say anything. It's obvious. It permeates. It trickles over. It's like a volcano that erupts over everybody that's around them. That was the chinuch of Avraham. Less talk, more action. But there's one thing. If you want to be role models to your children, you have to be around. It's hard to be a virtual role model. You know, it's hard to show our children right from wrong, but if we're unavailable. There was one doctor, it was more like a psychologist. He had very busy hours, worked long hours. His son came to him and said, Dad, can I ask you a question? He says, yeah, sure, son. It's a little private, you don't mind? Yeah, no problem. He says, how much do you get, like, for an hour? What do you mean, how much do I get? Get what? What are you talking about? He says, in the practice. He says, well, I figured his son maybe wants to become a doctor one day. He says, oh, yeah, I get $500-$600 an hour. So the son says, oh, that's a lot of money. Okay, fine. So the kid comes back. He says, Dad, if a patient wants a half hour, do you do, like, $300? Yeah, we don't like to do half hours because it ruins the whole schedule, but I guess $300. Yeah, okay. Kid comes back 15 minutes later. Dad, and let's say a patient only has like one question, like a 10-minute, or he just needs to get a quick, quick etza. Do you prorate it like 10 minutes? I guess he wants to give $150. Yeah, I guess 10 minutes. So the kid says, all right, I saved $150. Can I have 10 minutes? Wow. And the father was paralyzed. Which means he understood that the kid, he had no time. So I'm a patient now. I'm not your son. So I'm like everybody else. Like, so can I, what's the rates? How does it work? Yehoshua ben Gamla, this is the Hiddush I want to say in the Gemara. You know what his invention was? He made an invention for the orphans. You know which orphans? The orphans that their parents are still alive. The children that have parents, but they're like orphans because the parents are never around to give them the proper chinuch. He saw what was happening. Everybody was gallivanting. Everybody was all over the place. And the children were yetomim. Where's daddy? Where's mommy? And therefore he said, you know what? We need now to make role models, not to take the place of parents. No one can take the place of the parent. But we need to have a shaliach now. So if they're not going to see the role model at home, at least we should have them 8 hours or 10 hours in yeshiva. We should have a rebbe or a teacher that should give them the proper chinuch. That was the original invention for the yitomim. And we understand it in our generation. We see, what does it mean, the yitomim that have parents. I'm sure it's the same thing in your community like our community. You know, go to somebody that lives in the south, somewhere in, you know, Savannah, Georgia. Ask them how many weddings they went to in their life. They went to their wedding, and they were invited to a wedding. Oh, when they're invited to a wedding, it's a big thing. They get an invitation, they go rent a tuxedo, they talk about it for 6 months, we're going to a wedding, they go, they drive 8 hours, they go to get there early, they stay late, oh, we went to a wedding. We go to more weddings and more parties in 1 week than most Americans go in their entire lives. And that's a benacha, I don't say no. But there's casualties as a result of it. I'm not saying that I have the right system, and by no means am I the one to, again, talk about parenting. But my wife is a tzaddikit. She has a rule. And she sticks to the rule, and it's known in our community. You know, as the rabbi, we have to go to a lot of functions. But it's become known already. The rabbi's never, his wife never's there. Never at a wedding, never at any. And if my wife will come to, it's what happened here. My wife told me in the beginning, my children are the most important thing over here. When I get a wedding invitation, she said, it's not a summons. We have to attend. They put me in jail. Was it a court martial? Was it jury duty? And if I don't attend, what are they going to do to me? I have my children. Is that the shame when my children get old and they get married and they're settled? And I go to all the weddings. I go to all the parties. Oh, but it's an obligation. But what's a big obligation? The role modeling of our children. You know, the old time is Iskia. They're alive, your grandparents, your great-grandparents. I know mine, and I'm sure we're the same. You talk to the old-timers, they would always talk like, my father used to say, they had like certain shitot, hashkafot. My father was a stickler when it came to this, and this was his thing on that. And I wonder if our children today have that same... Oh, are we around enough where they know our mahalach? They know. What do they say? What can they say that they have, that we have such an impression on them that we leave a mark on them that they know that there's a certain, the mother was always careful in this thing. And that's the Inyan of Teshuvah Fe'elul. The Ben Surer Moreh reminds us, number one, our children are all special. There's no such thing as writing off any child. Kulam kedoshim, kulam tehorim, kulam berurim. Yidin, the yud. From olam ha'atzilut. A world that's higher than the malachim even. Lo haya ve'lo nevra. Doesn't exist such a thing that you kill a child when he's 12 because he's going to do something. Because he might not do it. We don't follow the statistics. Ani hayiti al kivroiz. I went to the kibbutz to receive a hara from one of these kids. He turned out to be one of the tanaim. And that being said, we learn a great musar. What does it mean to our teachers? Kilu yilado. If the mother forgives the wayward son, we understand why she forgives, because she sees it. She sees the goodness. My son's a good boy. And our teachers have to be that way. And we have to program in the teachers' brains that our children are good. To position our children in the right way. We shouldn't indict our children. Musar in private. But to the teacher, we have to elevate the child so he has a better chance to succeed. And then Be'azat Hashem will be a little more round. That's a Kabbalah we have to, I'm talking to myself. We'll be a little more round. We'll be a little more round this year for our children. You don't have to go to every party. You don't have to go to every wedding. We don't have to make every trip. We don't have to make every dinner. We don't have to make on yourself. I'm going to skip one function a month. It's a small Kabbalah. That's 12 functions. 12 functions, and you'll ask your children, they'll say, that was the best night, Dad, when you... I know myself, when my children see me walking around the house at 9 o'clock, Dad, there's no shiur tonight? No, there's no class tonight. You see them glow like a light bulb. You home? But I want to tell you, it's interesting. You think that they talk to me for the next hour straight. No, they just run around. Their father's home. It's a different head for a child. There's a security. There's a certain confidence that they have. We have to accept it. Accept upon ourselves this Be'ezat Hashem. And then, Borei Olam will give us, Bechol banayich limudei Adonai v'rav shalom banayich, al tekre banayich ela bonayich, kol ro'ehem yakirun ki hem zera berach Hashem. All those that see them will recognize that they are from the blessed seed. Amen. Ladies and gentlemen, I was asked to announce, I really just came to give a derasha. You should know what we're involved in. A few years ago, we started a website. I myself don't have the internet in my house, but we're involved in it in a very big way. Over the past, I would say, 10 or 15 years, we've given out over 3 million CDs the worldwide for free as a result of this hidden Sadiko vehicle called Rico. Everything gratis. We put them on the table, they take them, it's free, there's no excuse. And trust me, after traveling the world over, I've seen what these CDs have done and changed the lives of so many. Speeches like this, Musad, inspiration. We started a website putting thousands of shiurim on every topic, again, for free. So you just have to click on learntorah.com, and you can click on any topic, Torah, Gemara, Halakha, Musar, Navi, Pirkei Avot, Mish, anything. At a click, and so many Jews, we did a study on the site a few months ago. In 1 week, we had Jews from 84 countries logging on, listening to the Divrei Torah. I don't know if the UN has 84 countries. And about 18,000 hours a week of people logging on, listening. My opinion is this, the website has to be free. They want to charge $3 a CD, $4 a CD. To me, I don't want to lose a customer because he doesn't want to swipe his credit card for $3. I don't want $3 to interfere with his Olam Abba, that for $3 he's going to lose eternity. So I accepted upon myself a personal Kabbalah to help Rico keep the site free, everything. But it costs us money to run this site. We have webmasters, we have downloaders, we have technology, we have these machines, and it costs money to keep it free. We've gone around to different places, and it's going to be free. We're going to do it. It's not that we have a doubt. It's not a big, we're not building a multi-zillion dollar company. It'll be done. Whoever wants to help us. One rabbi said, Elul stands for Ish l're'ehu u'matanot le'evyonim. Ish l're'ehu u'matanot, which means it's the time to give tzedakah. So one of the collectors went around and said, Elul, Ish l're'ehu u'matanot le'evyonim. So the fellow told him, Elul, en li velech lecha. So, hope you're not going to say the en li velech lecha. We came here, I was asked to announce also the class that we give on Thursday nights. The way I understand it is broadcasted here in Lawrence, in the Sha'aret Tefillah, Central Avenue, at 7:45 on Thursday nights in the synagogue. We're trying. Please, whoever can speak to Rico or to Solomon the Balabayan and wants to help us keep this site free, They have different programs, and even if you don't want to be part of the official program, you want to be above it, below it, he'll take anything. And like I said, if it's going to come from here, beautiful. If not, we had a wonderful night. Past my expectations to see such wonderful Jews and talk good Musar and say the Torah that we never said before, and we're going to succeed. Visit it, learntorah.com, and to school the Shanim Rabot Neimot V'Tobot.